Well, funnies have been a part of our newspapers now for more than 100 years. And a lot of strips have come and gone over that time. But there are examples that come to mind when we think of the genre. Classics that people know of. Think of Gasoline Alley, Prince Valiant, the Katzenjammer Kids, if you want to go way, way back. How about Blondie? There's also, for the more contemporarily minded, Garfield, Calvin and Hobbes. And then there are Peanuts. A strip so popular that 16 years after the death of its creator, it is still the lead comic in our local newspaper. Peanuts is still being run in papers across the country. What speaks to its popularity? Why do people still want to read reruns? Well, Charles M. Schulz was a brilliant cartoonist, and he developed his technique and his style over the period of almost 50 years. His little line drawings were simple yet sophisticated. They were charming, yet they could also be cutting. He knew how to set up a gag. And quite frequently, he shared a profound observation. But the enduring reason for this comic strip's appeal, I believe, is its characters. We've come to know them and to love them. Snoopy, who went from being a four-legged pet to a two-legged character with a vivid imagination. Schroeder with his piano and love of Beethoven. Pigpen with his trail of dust. Linus with his blanket and love of everyone around him. Lucy with her psychiatrist booth and her love of herself. And then, of course, the strip's namesake himself, Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown, the pint-sized everyman with whom each of us can identify. Surely, there has been a time in your life when, despite the odds and common sense, you have persevered. You've kept on plugging away, just like Charlie Brown, who hopes that this will be the day that he finally kicks the football. Maybe you haven't been good at something, but you've still kept enjoying it. Think of poor Charlie Brown on that pitcher's mound. Maybe you have yearned for something, and it hasn't come to pass the way you like. Think of Charlie Brown and the little red hair girl. And then think about anxiety, something that we all know in our own ways. Charlie Brown has lots of them, and he's got lots of stuff to worry about. He can be hapless, he can be clumsy, and then that primal fear for all kids, he can be left out. Now, I don't know about you, but it is remarkable to me that in my mid-50s, I can still remember the dread of being in the school playground in my elementary school years and just praying to God that I would not be the last one picked. I never thought about the other kid who might be the last one picked and what he or she might be going through. Now, God, please don't let me be the last one picked. I didn't want to feel that I was left out. Even worse, of course, would not be picked at all. Who wants to be the outsider, left looking in? I think this dynamic was brilliantly illustrated in the wonderful old TV special, A Charlie Brown Christmas. You remember, Charlie Brown is tasked with buying a tree. And he went off to the lot. And there were a lot of fine specimens there, but his gaze settled on a little sprig. He felt sorry for it. And so he bought it and brought it back to his schoolmates. They laughed at him. They scorned him. They told him he couldn't do anything right. Even his dog Snoopy dumped on him. And off they went. And there was poor Charlie Brown on the outside looking in. My suspicion is that everybody in this sanctuary at some point in his or her life has had that feeling of being on the outside looking in, a feeling that he's been excluded, that she's been left out. It's not a pleasant experience. It can be painful. It can be a source of great hurt and alienation. And that's why today's story from Luke is so important for us to hear. Because it is all about people on the outside looking in. The most obvious figure, of course, is the slave. He is on the outside looking into the world of freedom. He doesn't get to choose where he will go or what he does, even though the centurion values him. And we will interpret that in the most charitable way possible, that he values him as a person, as an individual in his life. The centurion is still his master. The slave is on the outside looking into the world of liberty. But that's not the only way he's on the outside. There's the divide between the world of the healthy and that of the ill. We see how that works in our own world today. People who are differently abled or grappling with mental health challenges, chronic illness, are often pushed aside. Remember our society's less than stellar response to the advent of the AIDS crisis and the stigmatization that went on. And in some circles continues today. All of that would have been experienced by the slave, with the additional belief of that day that illness is a sign of divine disfavor, that he had somehow brought it on himself. But the slave is not the only outsider here. Consider the centurion. Now, at first blush, that might seem like a strange claim. He is, after all, a citizen of the Roman Empire, the mightiest empire of the day. He's an officer in the army. He has status and people who listen to him. He's earned the respect of the local community. And if he can afford to build a house of worship like a synagogue, he must have money. So there he is. Position, status, respect, wealth. Sounds like an insider to me. But that's not how he perceives himself, is it? He loves that community. He loves the Jewish people. He clearly respects their God. He's willing to take a flyer on their God and one of his teachers. But he doesn't feel he's even worthy to go talk to that teacher. He doesn't feel the teacher should come into his home. Why? Because he is not good enough. He doesn't feel that he is fully part of that community. Perhaps he worries about bringing ritual impurity into Jesus' world. The centurion was an outsider looking in. I imagine the religious leaders may have felt a bit like outsiders too. Yes, they were the folks who could expound on the Torah and what it meant and set guidelines and norms for their community, but they weren't in charge. There were Romans running everything. They were outsiders in their own home. And we don't know much about the friends of the centurion who come out to meet Jesus. But as respected as the centurion was, there must have been people in that community who thought, as good a guy as he is, it would be nice if he were charitable back home in Italy. So maybe those friends were seen as collaborators. Maybe they were shunned by their community, and they were also on the outside looking in. Which leaves us with Jesus. Jesus, the Son of God. Jesus, Emmanuel. Jesus, God here on earth. Now, Jesus is the Lord, and God is the creator of the universe. That sounds pretty inside to me. But remember how Jesus came to us. Not as a king, not as a conqueror, not as a celebrity or a CEO. He came to us as a mewling infant, born to a young woman and a tradesman in an inconsequential town. To anybody who mattered in his day, he would have been an outsider. He wouldn't have even been worthy of their attention. And consider how he grows up, an itinerant preacher. An itinerant preacher who is rejected and pushed away by the religious and political establishment. I don't want to let him in. They just want to tell him he's wrong. They want to tell him to go away. And then finally, they kill him. Jesus was an outsider looking in, and he chose that role. Think about the ones with whom he spent his time. The tax collectors, the prostitutes, the sinners, the sick people. All of the people who find themselves in life on the outside looking in. Those outsiders could be wealthy, they could be poor, they could be male, they could be female, they could be Jew, they could be Gentile. But they were the ones with whom Jesus spent his time. And that is the good news for us. God has chosen to come to the outside, to be present, and to stand with those who feel excluded. Whether it's refugees, the slightly odd duck at work, sick people, the troubled teen trying to get her life back on track. Anybody, any of us who has ever felt on the outside, that is where God is. And when God appears there, that place of exclusion, that place which seems to be beyond the pale, becomes holy and sacred. Indeed, it becomes the center of God's universe. That place is transformed and changed. Think about the end of a Charlie Brown Christmas. What happens there? This is an aside. Could you imagine anybody making that special today and airing it on network TV? It is a profoundly Christian show. Linus is up there on stage reading from Luke, the birth narrative. And perhaps you already know this. Schultz was not only a talented artist and a very wry observer of contemporary culture, but he was a good theologian. So Linus reads the birth narrative from Luke. And the kids hear the story. And they all go to Charlie Brown and the sad little tree, and they decorate it. And it's transformed. But it's still the little tree. But its beauty has been brought out. Its potential has been realized. And Charlie Brown's faith has been validated. That place on the outside all of a sudden became the inside. It was where community was formed. And the kids start to sing, "Hark the Herald Angels Sing," a Christmas carol, a hymn. They're worshiping God. And in that moment, There is no outside or inside. There is just that one place of holiness and wholeness. We are not alone. When we feel that we are on the outside looking in, even if we do not sense His presence, God is right by our side, on the outside, looking in. And indeed, changing and transforming that place. So it is not a location beyond. It is not a place of exclusion. But instead, it is the center of God's universe. It is the place where we meet and experience God's love.